Faith Middleton in New Haven, and this show is about the richness of life. It's the book show, A Live Call-In. Great reads coming your way in this hour. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. Let us know about a book you liked. Book club members, what are you reading? 203-776-9677. In fact, we have a theme idea for book clubs. 203-776-WNPR. You can tell us on Facebook now, search The Faith Middleton Show, or tweet us at FaithWNPR, FaithWNPR. My book buddies are here, Lee Jacobus, editor of the college textbook A World of Ideas, and Rose Quiello, professor at Southern Connecticut State University and Quinnipiac University. Hey, everybody. So here's our idea about a book club theme. This Monday, we're going to do a call-in show that I think is going to be so fascinating. And the theme is, what and who disturbs the comfortable? And so we'll be taking your calls. People will be telling stories. Bruce Clements is going to join me for that. It's this Monday on this show at 3 and 9 p.m. We think this is also a great theme for book clubs. And so Rose and Lee and I are going to knock this around a little bit. If you apply it to books, what do you come up with? Which writers, which titles have disturbed the comfortable? We'll knock this around just a little bit and then open the phones for your calls and look at books in general, not just those that have disturbed the comfortable. Although I bet you could argue that every book has disturbed somebody.
I know that's true.
So Lee, what book would one of the books you'd choose to
say? Well, I think in terms of American literature, the book that first comes to mind is Huckleberry Finn. I mean, Huckleberry Finn has a claim on being the great American novel, but the people are afraid to read it because of one word. And it's the N-word. And the question is, who is really being disturbed by that? I mean, that's an interesting question in itself. But that book should be taught in our schools, and oftentimes it isn't, because it disturbs essentially the comfortable.
And still on the banned book lists
places. It's been banned all over the country.
So banned book lists are places where books are banned. You could say these books are singular in their ability to disturb the comfortable in some quarters.
That's true.
Rose, do you have a book that you'd say?
Yeah, well, I can't help but think about Darwin's The Origin of Species. I mean, here this man comes along, this great scientist, puts forth the theory of the survival of the fittest, and the church attacks him horribly. The idea that we weren't created as Adam and Eve, it challenges the idea of creationism. Not only that, he was a deeply religious man who suffered great depression at having his ideas attacked as they were. And now, of course, we celebrate them. And I couldn't help but think about Stephen Jay Gould. You can't even call him an anthropologist. I don't know what you call him because he's so wonderful. But, you know, he talks about science and religion going along a parallel lines, that they're not going to intersect. Let it go, he says. And so I think of Darwin, one of my heroes.
All right, Lee, just before the show started, you came up with Christopher Hitchens, the late Christopher Hitchens, and and his book.
Well, God Is Not Great, yes. Hitchens was a very committed atheist, if there is such a term, who simply dismantled, from his point of view, using logic, the arguments for the existence of God. Of course, one of them being we have a sense of a need, an emotional need for the concept of God. And if there is no God, we will create one simply because of our need. And in fact, I have been reading something about the history of ancient Egypt, and I discovered that 4,500 years ago, the whole concept of God and the afterlife was as profound then as it is now. I think Hitchens is right, that in the sense that no matter what, we would really need to create a deity if we didn't think there was one.
Lee, an interesting point from you about Salinger's Catcher in the Rye.
Right.
Now, you put this on the list of books that have disturbed people. Yes. But for in a different way.
Yeah. Well, in fact, the book disturbed a number of people who committed terrible things with that book, you know, in their pocket and having been influenced. But the person it disturbed most was Salinger himself. The fact is that he really wound up becoming almost a hermit in a reaction because he felt that this book had caused problems that he never anticipated. And I think that, you know, you could make an argument that it was that book that made him stop publishing, not stop writing, but stop writing publicly. It is a disturbing book if you think about it. When I was very young, I thought it was absolutely terrific book, and it made me.
Me too.
It made me, you know, question authority, which is in fact the principle of the whole thing. I identified with it, but I didn't do anything crazy.
So this is timely. Talking about these books, a lot of them still on these lists in certain communities of banned books, where the libraries
yeah.
you know, refuse to carry them. Parents are monitoring the shelves in these communities. The word goes around. There are actual lists.
Yeah.
This is right now Banned Book Week. And so it's very interesting to go online and Google that to yeah. see what lists are still running. And a lot of the books we've been talking about are still – what about Lolita?
Well, Lolita, of course, is a real case in point. It's a magnificent book. It's certainly one of the greatest pieces of modern literature and written brilliantly. And it disturbs people because it is the story of what appears to be a child molester, a pederast, who runs off with a young girl and makes her his captive. And one asks, how can this be accepted? We accept Bluebeard in an odd way because that's ancient, but this is a modern story, and this could be taken out of the newspapers, and where we would read avidly, of course, about it. So it's quite interesting, you know. At Fairfield University not long ago, maybe 25 years ago, there was a special cage for all the books that were on the index. And one Saturday night, apparently, students climbed over that cage, took out all the books that were on the index that were in that cage, and put them on their proper places on the shelves of the library. And I've always thought this is one of the most intelligent ways of dealing with banned books.
That gives me goosebumps.
Yeah. Isn't that – I've always thought this was really a marvelous moment.
Hey, what a story. That's yeah. great. Perfect. So I hope you will join us. Feel free when you call in to add a book to the list. If you think about a book or an author who has disturbed the comfortable, we're going to move on to all kinds of books now. But feel free during this hour if you want to do that. This is Banned Book Week. 203-776-WNPR. And I hope you will join us on this show Monday at 3:09 p.m. and, of course, online permanently at WNPR.org, because we're going to do a call-in show. Bruce Clements will join me on people and things disturbing the comfortable. Terry, welcome to our show. It's great to have you on the book show.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Terry.
This is not a classic. I've enjoyed hearing what you've talked about so far. This is a book that I am just a book fanatic, and this is one that's not even really in the genre that I normally read, but it's called The Returned, and it's by Jason Mott. And it's fiction, of course. When you hear the subject matter, you'll know why. But it's, I guess it's a phenomenon where all over the world people are returning from the dead and kind of transplanting themselves into the lives of their families. And there's a guy who died in 1966, and his parents, you know, settled into a comfortable life, and he all of a sudden is back, after all, you know, in the present. So, I just thought it would be interesting. It would dredge up some things, I think, for people who've lost loved ones.
Yeah, okay. Thank you so much, Terry. So that's The Return by Jason Mott.
In past tense, returned. Yep.
Yes, The Returned. Past tense. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Rose Quiella, what do you have?
Faith, I like to talk about a nonfiction book called Quiet, The Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking. It's by Susan Cain. And I heard Susan Cain, I watched her in a TED Talk on YouTube talking about this. And then I realized when I was in Barnes & Noble a few weeks ago that the book is out. And it's called Quiet. And what she does is she really pays homage to introverts, that we're a society, she says, that celebrates the gregarious, those who love the limelight. And as I tell my students, many plants thrive in the shade. So, and she opens the book with Rosa Parks, who just said on the bus when asked that she should move, no. And even Rosa Parks wrote, let me say that Rosa Parks is described by friends, by family as quiet, always quiet. She had a quiet humility. And her memoir is Quiet Strength. And so what I love about Susan Cain is that she celebrates, and Lee and I can tell you as teachers, those introverts in the classroom, and offers them a sense of entitlement that they should not aspire to be gregarious.
So a good friend has read this book and loves it and said it's not one of these self-esteem books necessarily. It actually is more sort of biologically based, an explanation of why some people are, in fact, you know, truly introverted, and that it's not about change, but here's how the brain works. And this, there's also all these psychological things to look at about this.
So, about being wired a certain way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I love those students that sit back and take it all in and reassure them that I don't want them to be any different. It's Susan Cain's Quiet.
Thank you. Lee Jacobus. Mm-hmm.
Well, I am going to visit my...
Lee, I'm so sorry. They said Linda's been waiting quite a while.
Cool.
Can I ask
you
a favor? Thanks. Yeah. Linda, sorry to keep you waiting. Go ahead.
Thank you, Faye. I have a wonderful book that I stumbled on quite by accident. The name of the book is The Holding, and it's by Marilyn Simons. I believe that's how you pronounce it. She is a Canadian writer. And she writes about two women, Allison Thompson and Margaret McBain, who live on the same land in Canada. That they were both, in a sense, pioneers. One was a virtual, one was an actual pioneer. The other left the city to live out in the rural countryside. So they lived 100 years apart, and the one living in this century stumbles upon the journal of Margaret McBain. Both women are solitary. They both love nature, in particular herbs, and they're herbalists. They know a lot about nature. And both of them have to deal with betrayal by very close people, one by her brothers, the pioneer, and the other by her husband. And it's how one inspires the other 100 years later to deal with betrayal. Mm.
So, and how do you spell Simons, Marilyn Simons?
It's S-I-M-O-N-D-S. Okay. I have to say, I'm very interested in nature, although I live in the city. But what struck me is not only learning a lot about Canada, you know, the rural part of Canada and herbs, but the way the woman writes, I can only say it's like almost like a poetic meditation. Her writing is absolutely beautiful.
And is it fiction?
Yes, it is.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. The Holding, Marilyn Simons.
Yes, I recommend it highly. It's going to put you in a trance.
Great. Thanks so much. I appreciate your call, Linda.
Thank you.
We're going to talk about Jhumpa Lahiri's new novel. It's winning everything. And, so many things to tell you about. Brand new book, a memoir about Johnny Carson. There's an embargo. We're not supposed to say what's in it, but we certainly can talk about it. We're going to do that here on The Book Show. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back. Find out what we talk about, including great reads. The title's here on the show online anytime at WNPR.org. Click on Programs to find the Faith Middleton Show. I'm with Lee Jacobus, Rose Quiello, my book buddies, and we started looking at books and authors who have disturb the comfortable, because that's going to be the theme of our call-in show on Monday, and we're previewing it a little bit here. This is Banned Book Week, and so it was a very timely conversation. Lee, do you have a book to recommend?
I do. In fact, it's a book that I'm going to give to my granddaughter this weekend. It's a book that was very influential to me when I was very young. It's The Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam. It's the Rubaiyat. It's supposed to be, of course, a Persian poet, but it was filtered through a Victorian poet named Fitzgerald. So it's really kind of a combination of the Victorian end of the century kind of melancholy, but it's also, you know, some of the wisdom of the ancients, and it is comprised of 100 quatrains, and they're all very simple and they're wonderful poems to read. For example, I sent my soul through the invisible some letter of that afterlife to spell, and by and by my soul returned to me and answered, "I myself am heaven and hell." Now, it puts an awful lot of stuff into one very short poem. And, of course, there's always the, you know, book of verses underneath the bough, a jug of wine, a loaf of bread, and thou with beside me singing in the wilderness. I mean, this evokes a terrific emotion. So I'm hoping she'll get a kick out of it. It's a nice, you know, fancy edition.
What a great thing. Is this one of the books that was – because we have asked Lee if he would – tell us about three books that have greatly affected his life. Is this one of them?
Well, it's one of, yes. I mean, the list grows.
Okay.
But yes, of course, it was one that I just read again and again and again as a kid. And it's called The Rubaiyat, and that's spelled Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam, which is spelled Khayyam. It's a wonderful book to dip into.
All right. I just wanted to say, if you are a fan of the writer Jhumpa Lahiri, you know that she has a new novel out, she's a Pulitzer Prize winner. It's called The Lowland, and it's set in both America and India. People who love her work swoon over her, and I am one of the swooners. And so I have not read this novel yet, but it is already winning everything. So good things are going to happen, I think, in the coming year for Jhumpa Lahiri.
Oh, yes.
And so and it's J-U-M-P-A, I think it's J-H-U-N-P-A. Have I got it? At Lahiri, L-A-H-I-R-I. It's The Lowland. David, mm-hmm. Welcome to the show at 203-776-WNPR. Go ahead, David.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great, thanks. Good to have you on the show.
I just wanted to comment, one of my favorite authors and producers of content is Michael Crichton. And, uh-huh. I mean, if the name doesn't sound familiar to some people, Jurassic Park, The Lost World, if you've ever watched an episode of ER, he's touched you in some sort of way or another with his content. And one of his favorite books of mine is a book called State of Fear.
Yeah.
And I love that book because he mixes very truthful facts with other non-facts and creates a sort of fiction that can almost be non-fiction in some sense. And it's a very chilling novel, and I very much recommend it to any reader.
He is good at what he does, isn't he? Thank you so much. State of Fear, Michael Crichton. Thanks, David. 203-776-WNPR here on The Book Show. Rose Quiello.
Faith, I wanted to revisit an old book by Sue Miller called While I Was Gone. The book is set in Massachusetts. Joe is an unhappily married woman who leaves her husband and lives in a kind of a commune in Cambridge. An event takes place that I won't get into, and Joe goes back home, becomes a veterinarian, remarries, thinks she's very happy. And years later, she runs into one of the old roommates. This is a book that's difficult to put down, but here's the reason why. And I want to throw this out to you and Lee. You both have known me for decades. And what if I happen to say, you know what, 30 years ago I committed a terrible crime that I was never punished for, never got caught. What do you do with that information? You know me now. You know that I care for people. I'm an honorable, I think, human being. Now what do you do? Do you turn me in? You know, it's a real... So we had a book club on this, and I was the...
What happened?
Well, there were only two of us
oh, no.
who thought we'd have to think about it. The majority of the, I mean, we almost had a fist fight. The majority of the book club members felt that I should be turned in immediately. And there were a couple of us, I and an older woman, an 80-year-old woman, who thought we would have to think about it.
And it what had you done? Does it matter how serious?
Yeah, it's a serious crime, and I don't want to give away the book. Yeah. But it's just, what do you do with information like
so
that?
Do you love this book because it is a page turner? Because it gets you to think about this moral dilemma, or all of the above?
I love it for both of those reasons. It's incredibly compelling and suspenseful. But more important, you know, it really forces you to test your value system. And just for one quick second to get back to disturbing the comfortable, I tell my students, if I don't do that, ask for your money back. I mean, you know, my job is to test the comfortable. So with this Sue Miller book, it really got me thinking about what I would do if I heard you committed a crime, Faith. Sue Miller, while I was gone.
Mm. Okay. Doug Coffin. Hey, Doug, how are you? It's good to have
you
on the show.
How are you?
Oh, long time since I've talked to you. What a pleasure.
Well, I was driving and I heard about your deeply disturbing books, and I pulled over, and I had to mention a book that I really wish I had never read.
What?
Shogun.
Oh.
It's a description of someone enjoying the torture of others is just so very real, so something that you can so readily imagine being true, that it's really something that stuck with me, and I just I hate the idea that there's that in the world, and I can't get it out of my head.
Mm. So the theme we were talking about earlier in the show is disturbing the comfortable, because this is Banned Book Week, and
yeah,
we're going to be looking at that question on our show as a call-in on Monday here at 3 and 9 p.m., and so Doug's responding to that. Doug, I can't remember. Who wrote Shogun?
I don't know.
Someone will tell us.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I don't have my laptop at my fingertips. Thank you so much, Doug.
All right.
Great to hear from you. Well. Bye-bye. 203-776-WNPR. Lee Jacobus, are we going to get to – we've asked you to tell us about your three books that have greatly affected your life. So give me one.
The very first one is Uncle Wiggily. When I was an infant. Now, the reason Uncle Wiggily is good, I don't even know who wrote Uncle Wiggily, and I haven't seen an Uncle Wiggily book for years. But my mother, when I was about 4, 5, and 6 years old, used to read Uncle Wiggily to me every evening. And, of course, the Uncle Wiggily stories always ended with if you're a good boy, you know, you'll get another story tomorrow. And I always wanted all the stories at once, but my mother just rationed them out one at a time. But the Uncle Wiggily book made me want to – they made me love literature. They were simple stories. They were probably very dumb by now. I don't know. But they really, really made me want to read and to read literature.
So let's ask this question of what do you think it was based on the content of Uncle Wiggily, or could your mother have pretty much chosen anything? Is it the act of reading with a child that develops an interest in reading for the child? What do you think?
Oh, I do think the act of reading with a child is very, very important. And it's one of the things that bonds, parent with the child. But in my case, I think also that Uncle Wiggily stories were pretty good. And it was the quality of the literature, as well as the fact that my mother read very beautifully.
She was a long-time English professor, by the way.
Right. She was a terrific reader. She read everything all her life. She was wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you so much. By the way, Shogun, thank you, is written by James Clavell, C-L-A-V-E-L-L.
Right. We knew that.
Yeah, we knew it somewhere in the recesses of somewhere. I wanted to mention to you that he has so many fans. Ivan Doig, D-O-I-G. He has a new novel out. It is called Sweet Thunder. And there's this character in his previous books, and probably his most popular character, but he's given this character a new theme, and a new setting, which is the power of the press in the era of intense corporate greed and social unrest. So Ivan Doig, for those who don't know, has published 15 books since his debut in 1978. He was a finalist for the National Book Award because of his book, This House of Sky. So this book that he's just done is set in 1919. Maury Morgan, who was in his previous book, The Whistling Season and Work Songs, this Maury finds himself, he's back in Butte, Montana. He's the chief editorialist for this upstart newspaper called Thunder. And this newspaper is challenging the ruthless Anaconda Company and its stranglehold that it has on this copper boomtown. So Doig, the author, has got his protagonist in this world of corporate intimidation, union politics. There are gangsters and bootlegging. There's suspense. There's intrigue of the Gilded Age. And it's all in this backdrop of the old-fashioned newsroom. Well, that had my interest in a second. I can't wait to read this. So it's Ivan Doig and his new novel, Sweet Thunder. Maureen, welcome to the book show at 203-776-WNPR. Go ahead, Maureen.
Thank you so much for taking my call. What a great topic.
Oh, no, it's great to have you. Go ahead.
The book that I would recommend that I found so disturbing and very touching at the same time, I read it when I was a younger, is called The Kinnavada Are Waiting for You. And it's written by Dorothy Bryant. And it is a story that is about love and redemption.
The Kinnavada?
The kin of Atta are waiting for you.
And how is Atta spelled?
K-I-N.
Yeah.
And Atta is A-T-A.
Okay, go ahead.
The kin of Atta are waiting for you. And it's the story of a man who is not such a very good man. He's done some terrible things. And how he finds himself in a terrible predicament. And out of nowhere is adopted by the kin of Atta, which is a tribe, a fantastical tribe, who teach him many lessons. Among them is unconditional love and forgiveness. It is just a remarkable book. I read it, as I said, years ago. I reread it several times, and each time I come away with something new to think about. So I would highly recommend it. It really kind of disturbs your morality, much to what the other caller said earlier about, you know, if I were convicted of a crime, you know, should somebody report me?
And it's Dorothy, the author is Dorothy
Bryant.
Bryant, B-R-Y?
Correct, A-N-T.
Okay, Dorothy Bryant. Thank you so much, Maureen. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I love your show.
Thank you very, very much. I appreciate that, too. Okay, who's up? Rose Quiello.
Faith Lee and I were standing waiting to come into the studio, and we were looking at Janet Ivanovich's book on how to write. And Lee and I had a great conversation about Stephen King's book, entitled On Writing, one of the best books on writing I've ever read. The first half is autobiographical, and he tells it so beautifully. But the second half offers these wonderful tools for writing. And it's not a book just for writers. It's a book for any of us who like words, who like to use words properly. Stephen King hates adverbs. He disdains them. They're overused. And it's just this very practical book about writing and one of the best books I've read, Stephen King. And I'm thinking about him because I ran to the bookstore. Although I've never read his novels, I went to the bookstore Sunday to buy his new novel because it was so wonderfully reviewed, only to find out that it's not out until Tuesday, so I missed it.
All right, so but right around the corner.
Right. Well, no, it passed.
Two days ago.
Oh, but anyway.
Okay. Thank you, Rose. And so that
Stephen King on writing.
Stephen King on writing. 203-776-9677 is our number here in the book show. Go ahead, Blake.
Hi.
Hi.
The book I'd like to recommend would be Catch-22 by Joseph Heller.
Yeah.
Fantastic novel. Really brings to light the stress that war brings to to soldiers during the conflict. And his writing style really, it was, I think, really influenced, you know, future storytellers such as Quentin Tarantino, in the style of kind of jumping around and you got to kind of piece it together. But just the humanity in the characters really drew me in.
You know what strikes me about it to this day is a novel that was responsible for getting everybody to see the catch-22s in their lives, you know, where one thing doesn't lead to the right thing necessarily and keeps you going around in these bureaucratic circles.
Oh, absolutely. He was very, very good at pointing out the things that we do and for no reason at all, other than we do them because we have to do them. We're told to do them, or it's just the way it is.
Yeah. Okay. You could say that's disturbing the comfortable. That fits into our theme for Monday's call-in show. Thank you so much. And banned book week. I wouldn't be surprised if Joseph Heller isn't on somebody's banned book list.
Oh, I'm sure you're right. But can you imagine Catch-22 being any other title than that? You know that originally it was something, the original title was something like Catch-17.
Really?
Yeah, they had to change it because Leon Uris wrote a novel that had the same number in it, you know, the U-17 or something. So they had to just suddenly have to change it to Catch-22. And I'm thinking, that could never be anything. It's like to be or not to be. You can't change that, right? It's graven.
Well, there's a book I want to talk about, and Pat Conroy said it brought him to tears. And it's a fairly new book. Came out at the end of summer, so we want to mention this, The Songs of Willow Frost. And we'll be right back. Lee's going to tell us about the second of three books that have greatly influenced his life. We'll be right back with more of The Book Show. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR, FaithWNPR, or join the conversation with us on Facebook. Search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to you for listening and to our talented team, senior producer Lori Mack and producer Jonathan McNichol. A fresh edition of The Book Show. We've been hearing about all kinds of things thanks to you. Book clubs, we'd love to know what you are reading, what you've read. 203-776-9677. We're about to hear from Lee Jacobus about another one of the three books that have greatly influenced his life. First, we have Babette Georgie writing to us on Facebook, and she said she recommends Andrew McCarthy's The Grand Jihad, How Islam and the Left Sabotage America. That is The Grand Jihad by Andrew McCarthy. Thank you, Babette. Tom, go ahead. Faith Middleton.
One of the books that I've enjoyed incredibly was Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain.
Oh, yes.
The author's name escapes me, but I thought the book was really profound in the sense that, number one, it helps people to acquire a skill that's very satisfying, but there's little side notes. And one of the things that I really thought was profound was that she brings out the point that most people that don't draw or can't draw well feel that it's an innate quality that they weren't born with. And she helps you to see that it's really an issue not of not being able to draw, but not being able to see clearly, because you have all these preconceived notions about what things are, what things look like, and your preconceptions get in the way.
Well, that, yes, and that would be Betty Edwards,
Drawing
on the Right Side of the Brain. Thank you very much for calling.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it very much. I love, there's some, brain science has become so amazing. And, you know, we have to use, there's a miracle of using our brains to understand our brains. And so all these books about how the brain works, I'm thrilled to see them.
Yeah.
And there's now, there's a book out, I can't remember the exact title, but it's about all the nonsense that's getting reported about neuroscience.
Yeah, right.
So, Lee, I asked you for three books that have changed your life.
Well, the second one was in high school. And it, again, it, I hate to say it, but it reveals more about me than it does about literature. I wound up for years carrying a copy of Edmond Rostand's Cyrano de Bergerac in my back pocket. Now, I wasn't alone. I was in high school. I was at a very tough New Jersey high school where everybody had to be part of a gang, and I was in a gang of three. And the three of us connected because we all carried copies of Cyrano de Bergerac, and we would all actually throw out lines occasionally, just knowing where the line appeared because it said something very important to us. But I think about it now, you know, it revealed to me what I didn't even wasn't aware of, how romantic I was at that time, you know, how I wanted to be romantic, because Cyrano was writing love letters on behalf of another person who was in love with the woman that he was in love with. And of course, that sense of longing and of, you know, not being able to reach your goal. The girl I really was infatuated with didn't really even look at me, you know, kind of thing. But I took some solace in Rostand and in Cyrano, who, you know, wasn't such a good looking guy, had a big nose, he wasn't the popular fellow, but he had all the skills and all the art that could make things. And, you know, I could see I just simply projected myself right into that. And it now I look back at it and I think, gee, that wasn't such a bad thing.
Have you ever reread it?
I have not. I have seen the movie about maybe 10 or 15 years ago.
I wonder what it would be like.
Oh, I should reread it. Yes. I've lost my wonderful copy that got so bent and broken, and, you know, but it's a wonderful, it's Cyrano de Bergerac. It is really a pretty good play.
I call that cookbook shape.
Yes,
you know,
it
there's
is cookbook
covers, or you know, sometimes there's even a cover missing, you know, because you're using it so much.
Oh yes.
Thank you, Lee. All right, and we have your third pick coming up just around the corner. Jennifer Faith Middleton and the gang, welcome to the book show.
Hi, Faith. Thank you. I'm calling to recommend In the Neighborhood: A Search for Community, One Sleepover at a Time. It's a fascinating story. It's written by Peter Loewenheim, who was living in the house as an adult that he grew up with as a child. And there was an unfortunate murder-suicide in his neighborhood, and he realized after the event that he didn't know any of his neighbors anymore, so he set out to get to know them by knocking on their doors and asking if he could sleep over and then shadow their lives for 24 hours. And his book is an account of the people that he met. I think he had more than half of his neighbors agree to this experiment. And it's an account of the people he met, the relationships that then grew into community on his street.
Love this.
Yes, great idea.
It's a fascinating book. And for people living in the Hartford area, he's coming to speak at a panel discussion in Glastonbury at the Riverfront Community Center on Thursday, October 24th. The panel is going to be moderated by Tom Condon of the Hartford Current.
Good, yeah.
It includes Peter Loewenheim, Susan Campbell, who's now with the Partnership for Strong Communities, and a professor from Trinity College and from UConn.
So how do you spell Loewenheim's last name?
It's Loewenheim.
Okay, In the Neighborhood, we'll say One Sleepover at a Time, Peter Loewenheim.
Yep.
Thank you very much. What a good thing. We have to have him on the show, I think, to talk about what happened.
Yeah. That would be great.
Thank you very
much. I'll follow up with you about that.
All right, great, and I hope people attend his appearance in this community discussion. Emily Faith Middleton, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. It's delightful.
Thank you.
Two things. One made my heart leap was Uncle Wiggily. It is so familiar to me, and like Mr.
Jacobus,
I haven't heard of it in years.
Yeah.
But I wondered if he knew about the board game, also extinct, but I remember also playing an Uncle Wiggily board game.
Yeah, I do, yes.
I remember that.
You do? I don't.
Yes.
I never got that far.
Yes.
And on writing... again, my heart leapt. I'm taking a memoir course, and I had already read it, but I'm reading it again and recommending it to everyone in my group because it is so exquisite on writing.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And that's it.
Thank you very much, Emily. I appreciate your call. Okay. Oh, how nice.
Yes.
Thank you. Rose, you know on writing.
Yes. I just talked about it a few minutes ago. It's Stephen King's book on writing and with all the tools and everything you need to be a good writer and a good reader.
Yeah. I honestly think it's his best book. Period.
I do too.
You know, of all them. And, you know, if you want to read books about how to write, there are two that are very wonderful. And that's the first one. Mm-hmm. Second one is Elmore Leonard's. The two of them really ask you to write a very simple, direct English sentence and to think in terms of a fullness of character, fullness of place, fullness of action. Mm-hmm. And there are no better books to read right now about that.
I agree.
Well, here is the book Songs of Willow Frost. Author Pat Conroy says about Jamie Ford's book that it brought him to tears. Mm-hmm. So she had a debut novel that people might know or remember, Hotel on the Corner of Bitter and Sweet. It did very well, and people have waited quite a long time to see what the second book would be, and here it is, Songs of Willow Frost. That's a dreamy thing to have Pat Conroy say. I bet she was pretty thrilled. But here's the story. This is one of those mother-son stories. It was love, loss, hope, the forgiveness, all that stuff. It's all set in the 1920s, Depression-era Seattle. There's this Chinese-American orphan, William Eng, and he goes to the Moore Theater in Seattle and becomes spellbound by this actress who goes by the name of Willow Frost. And he becomes convinced that this is his long-lost mother. And so he goes on this journey to meet the actress. And in the process, this story is about, the secrets in his past, the secrets that come out about her past. So, The Songs of Willow Frost, and that is by Jamie Ford. Lynn Faith Middleton, welcome to the book show.
Hi, Faith. I love your book show.
Thank you.
Everyone who's on it, I'm always interested to see what other people are reading. My suggestion for something that will take you out of your comfort zone is anything by Cormac McCarthy.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
He has the ability to do so much with so few words. I really think his writing is beautiful, but his subject matter is terrifying. I usually have to work myself up to a state where I can read his books. Mm. Because the subject matter is difficult, but again, so beautifully written. So that's
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. So sure. Let's say a couple words about Cormac McCarthy.
Well, Bloom, Harold Bloom said that Blood Meridian, which is his most blood-drenched novel, is the best post-war American novel. There is no question but that he has a great power. He is a fantastic stylist. And his stories are enormously important. I think he set the bar, frankly, right now. He has set the bar for American literature.
Really?
I really do, yes. I really do.
And I can't help thinking about The Road, which I thought altered me also. I talked about a book last week that altered me a few weeks ago. And his post-apocalyptic novel about a father and a son who survive – and it's and as your caller said, his the language is all pared down, and there's just this rhythm of this father and son walking, saying, "Am I going to be all right, Dad? Yes, you are. Am I going to be all right? Yes, you are." The Road.
Thank you, Lee. Did you get a chance to read Blood Meridian?
Oh yes.
And what is that about?
Well, it's about the West. It's about violence, a young boy trying to make his way through the West. I read it, about maybe 8 or 9 years ago, so I don't topped on my mind. But it is drenched with violence, no question about it. But it honestly reveals an aspect of American history which is not its point to be historical, but it does. It reveals a character and. I found it to be mesmerizing. The power of the language is astonishing.
This raises an interesting question for me about, say, the television series The Wire.
Yeah, well.
Just renowned. These are the street kids and adults, the crime, that's going on, incredible violence, family relationships, you know, cited by everybody as the best writing on television when it was on.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
So I wonder, does that qualify? You know, would you say that The Wire, because of the dialogue being and the writing being so powerful, it even though it's visual, it's a literary experience?
Oh, it is a literary experience, yeah. No, I am absolutely certain that it's probably the best thing that has ever been put on television up to now. I mean, I've actually gone on record in my books saying that and analyzed it, because it had four seasons, and those four seasons were incredibly focused, you know, on the police, on the criminals, on the politicians and on the city. I mean, I think it was very courageous of Baltimore to permit that to be shot there. It is a brilliant piece of work. It isn't just the violence. Look at the Greek dramas. All the Greek dramas are blood-drenched. I mean, people are eating their children.
It's a novel come to life. The Wire.
Oh, The Wire is even more than that. It's really an extensive series. It's an epic in a way. Mm-hmm. A series of novels come to life.
Oh, interesting. All right, Valerie, Faith Middleton, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you very much. I'm just calling to talk about a book that basically left such a mark on me it made me make a career choice. Dalton Trumbo's Johnny Got His Gun.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Such a beautiful novel, and in the end of the novel, if you remember, it's about a gentleman who was in the service during World War One. There was a big explosion. He lost his arms, his legs, his face. He's stuck in a hospital, and he relives his past, and he's trying to communicate. And the reason why it made me choose my career was I'm a nurse, and it just made me think about people who can't communicate and needing to communicate.
So I don't know this book. Is this Dalton Trumbo, T-R-U-M-B-L-E?
No, Trumbo.
Trumbo, T-R-U-M-B-O. Dalton Trumbo was one of the Hollywood people that were blacklisted in this.
Oh, I know who. Got it. All right. Johnny Got His Gun, Dalton Trumbo. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. You're welcome. Yep. So we're not supposed to talk about what's in this book, because there's a memoir come out. it's called Johnny Carson. So it is about him. It's written by his lawyer, his business partner, Henry Bushkin. I guess they had this long, long pals relationship. So he talks about their boys' trips to Vegas and the mob and being backstage at the Oscars. And he says about Carson that it was his relationship with him was the most thrilling, fun, frustrating, and mysterious experience that he'd ever had with anyone in his life. And so, you know, he tries to measure. He takes some measure of him psychologically in this memoir. So that's Johnny Carson. A lot going on in a late night comedian land right about now. So it's timely. Look at the life of Johnny Carson and Henry Bushkin's relationship with him. Okay, who have we got? Ron, Faith Middleton, welcome to the book show.
Hi, Faith. How are you?
Hi, Ron. Great, thanks. Go ahead.
This gal stole my thunder there, because I was also going to mention Dalton Trumbo's Johnny Got His Gun.
Oh, that's great.
I'm afraid this generation simply hasn't been exposed to it, and it's really one of the greatest books that I've ever read in my lifetime. Really had tremendous impact. Anyhow, she's pretty much expressed what the book's all about.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I'm afraid that the word hero is used far too frequently in our vocabulary today. And we are such a militaristic society that I really feel it's incumbent upon people to read this book.
Wow.
Get a different perspective. But I thank you very much.
Thank you. Johnny Got His Gun. So a reminder. Thank you, Ron. Appreciate it. Here's a quick message from Susan Grizzly Bristol on Facebook. She recommends Out of My Mind by Sharon Draper. It's a book for middle grade readers about a brilliant girl with cerebral palsy. And Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk by Ben Fountain about the Iraq War. It's funny and heartbreaking. Thank you so much for that, Babette. As always, this show's about the richness of life. Find the books, people, recipes, wine, and cocktails we feature online anytime at WNPR.org. Click on Programs. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.